This installment is part of OasisForAutism.com's At a Glance audio series.
And today we are doing something a little different for this deep dive. We aren't just reviewing a standard policy paper. We're really walking through what essentially amounts to a detective story.
Yeah, it really does feel like a noir mystery when you read it. You know, you have the smoking gun, the confusing paper trail, the seemingly unstoppable force of the government,
right,
and a twist ending that changes everything. But instead of a crime scene tape, we are looking at the sudden disappearance of vital services for adults with autism in Michigan.
Specifically, we are talking about the closure of facility-based day programs. We're diving into a comprehensive report by an author named Jim. He's a father advocating for his daughter, Felicia. And the central mystery he unravels is this. In 2017, Michigan began closing these programs, telling families that the federal government absolutely mandated it.
Which is that classic bureaucratic inevitability angle. You know, the whole, sorry, our hands are tied because Washington says these buildings have to go, excuse. But the source material we're looking at today argues that this narrative was a complete myth.
A myth with devastating consequences for real families. So our mission today is to empower you with the facts found in this report. We're going to explore how 9 other states, places like Massachusetts and Colorado, somehow kept their programs open under the exact same federal rules that Michigan claimed forced them to close.
Right. We are going to unpack the machinery of something called the HCBS settings rule and equip you with the data to challenge that feeling of hopelessness.
Because it is about understanding that policy is a choice, even when officials present it as a mandate.
So let's start where the story begins, the spark. It's January 2017, and I want you to imagine a conference room. The source describes it vividly. It smells like industrial coffee and resignation.
Which is a sensory detail that just tells you everything you need to know about the mood in that room.
It really does. Sitting at the table is Jim, the author of our source material. Across from him is the director of his daughter Felicia's day program. And she looks totally exhausted. She has to deliver the kind of news nobody wants to give. She tells him, the federal government is requiring us to close. The new HCBS settings rule doesn't allow facility-based day programs anymore.
And here's the crucial moment in the narrative. Jim believes her.
Well, yeah, of course he does. She's the expert, right? She runs the program. And as Jim points out in the text, federal mandates just sound immutable, like gravity. You don't argue with gravity, and you certainly don't argue with Washington.
Precisely. And we need to be very clear here. The director wasn't lying to him. She wasn't the villain in this story. She was repeating what Michigan officials had told her. She was a good person caught in a really bad feedback loop. But, and this is the pivot point of the entire investigation, she was wrong.
Wait, wrong?
Completely wrong. She was misinformed. Jim actually spent the next 2 years documenting what happened versus what the state claimed was happening. And what he found suggests that Michigan officials were either catastrophically mistaken or deliberately misleading regarding these federal rules.
Wow, that is a heavy accusation. But you're saying the data backs it up.
The data is overwhelming. The source makes it crystal clear that the federal rule did not kill Michigan's day programs. Michigan's policy choices killed them. While Michigan was shutting doors claiming they had no choice, other states were working overtime to keep theirs open.
Okay, so let's get into the evidence then. To understand the crime, we have to understand the weapon. Let's deconstruct this federal rule. What exactly is the HCBS settings rule?
So HCBS stands for Home and Community-Based Services. The rule became effective in March 2014. Now, the intent of the rule was genuinely noble. It was designed to ensure that people receiving Medicaid services have full access to the benefits of community living. It was meant to improve quality of life and prevent warehousing.
Which sounds great on paper. I mean, who doesn't want better community access?
Exactly. Everyone wants that. But the interpretation is where the battleground lies. Michigan interpreted this rule as a strict ban on facility-based programs. Basically, any building where people with disabilities gather for services. They equated the building itself with an institution.
But is that actually what the rule says?
Not at all. If we look at the guidance from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, the reality is very different. The source actually quotes the March 2019 CMS guidance directly.
Do you have that quote handy?
I do. CMS stated verbatim, the HCBS settings rules do not prohibit all facility-based day programs.
Wait, let me repeat that for everyone listening. The rules do not prohibit all facility-based day programs. That seems completely unambiguous.
It is unambiguous. The federal government established criteria for compliance, not for elimination. They wanted to fix the programs, not destroy them.
So what does the rule actually require then? If it's not saying burn the building down, what is it asking for?
It basically boils down to three core elements. First is integration. This means regular contact with non-disabled peers in the broader community. Second is choice. The individual should have autonomy in their daily activities. And third is respect. This covers individual autonomy in decision-making and privacy.
Okay, so integration, choice, and respect. I'm noticing something missing from that list.
What's that?
Must close all buildings and scatter everyone into generic community settings.
Exactly. That is nowhere in the rule. The source argues that Michigan looked at these requirements, which are really about how you operate, and treated them as a mandate to close the place where you operate. They chose rigidity. Other states looked at the exact same rule and chose preservation.
Let's prove that, because if the rule was truly a federal ban, it would apply everywhere, right? You can't have a federal ban that only applies in Detroit, but not in Boston.
Correct. And that brings us to our first major piece of evidence, which is Massachusetts. The source calls this the blueprint.
So if the rule supposedly bans these programs, how does Massachusetts even exist?
Not only do they exist, but they thrive. Massachusetts actually serves the highest proportion of adults with developmental disabilities in the nation. And guess what? They retained all their facility-based day programs.
All of them.
Every single one. And here are the numbers that really blow the federal mandate excuse completely out of the water. Massachusetts assessed 524 day program settings for compliance with this new rule.
524. That's a massive sample size. And based on Michigan's logic, a huge chunk of those should have been illegal, right?
You would certainly think so.
Mm-hmm.
But how many were found to be automatically disqualifying?
Let me guess. Zero.
Zero. Not one. They didn't find a single one that was inherently institutional or impossible to fix. Instead of closing them, they identified where improvements were needed. Maybe better documentation of outings or more individual choice in meals. And they supported the programs through the transition.
That is a staggering difference. Zero closures versus total elimination. But there's another layer to this Massachusetts story, isn't there? It's not just about rules. It's about resources.
It always comes back to resources. You cannot talk about policy without talking about the budget. The source highlights a massive disparity in funding. Massachusetts pays up to $69 per hour for high support needs.
$69 an hour.
Compare that to Michigan's rate mentioned in the source, $14.05 per hour.
Wow, $14 versus $69. That's a $55 gap.
It's not just a gap. It's a chasm. We'll come back to that later because it's critical to understanding the why behind the closures. But the takeaway here is that Massachusetts used political will to prioritize service preservation.
Yeah.
They proved that facility-based programs can meet federal standards if they are funded and managed correctly. They didn't use regulatory wizardry. They just decided that keeping these services was a priority.
It really highlights that this was a choice. But Massachusetts isn't the only one. The source also points to Colorado and Pennsylvania as showing us alternative paths. Let's look at Colorado first. What was their specific strategy?
Colorado took a very proactive regulatory approach. They didn't just wait for programs to fail. They actually created Regulation 8.491.
Catchy name. But what did it actually do?
It filled the vacuum. Instead of looking for loopholes, Colorado wrote a specific regulation to show programs how to comply. They created a checklist.
Like a how-to guide?
Exactly. They detailed how to document community outings, how to provide meaningful alternatives, and how to ensure rights. Their default assumption was compliance. They assumed programs wanted to follow the rules and help them do it. Michigan's default assumption appeared to be elimination.
That's a huge mindset shift. We will help you fix this versus you have to shut down. What about Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania is really interesting because they specifically tackled the needs of the autism community. They utilize an adult autism waiver.
And there's a specific number attached to that waiver that jumped out at me in the report.
You're thinking the funding cap. Pennsylvania's waiver has an individual cost limit of up to $97,000 annually.
$97,000 per person per year.
It's a significant investment, but it reflects a crucial understanding. Level 2 and Level 3 autism require specialized infrastructure.
Can we pause right there? Why is that distinction Level 2 and 3 so important here?
Because the generic community approach often assumes a certain level of independence. But for individuals with complex support needs, maybe they are non-speaking, maybe they have aggressive behaviors or significant medical needs, you cannot just rely on scattering them into the library or the mall all day. Pennsylvania recognized that specialized facilities are part of the solution, not the problem.
So we have Massachusetts, Colorado, Pennsylvania, the source lists others too, right? New Jersey, Connecticut, Maryland, New York, California, Minnesota, Wisconsin.
All high-performing states.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them kept their facility-based programs.
And then there's Michigan.
Ranking 47th nationally for adult autism services.
47th. That really paints a picture of where the priorities lay.
It really does. The pattern is undeniable. High-performing states preserve their infrastructure. Michigan eliminated it.
I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier, the language used to justify these closures. The source mentions a term that was wielded like a bureaucratic weapon. That term is heightened scrutiny.
Ah, yes. Heightened scrutiny. It sounds terrifying, doesn't it? Like you're being interrogated in a windowless room.
It sounds like you are already guilty.
And that is exactly how it was used to scare families and providers. But let's clarify what it actually means. In the context of the HCBS rule, heightened scrutiny simply means a review process. It's a verification step. Think of it like a tax audit or a health inspection.
Well, nobody likes an audit, but it doesn't mean you're automatically going to jail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
CMS reviews specific settings that might look institutional, maybe they're large or on the grounds of a hospital, to verify that they actually meet the standards for integration and choice. It does not mean automatic disqualification.
So passing heightened scrutiny is entirely possible.
Not only possible, but it happened everywhere else. Settings in Massachusetts passed. Settings in Colorado passed. The key is that CMS cares about the experience of the individual. Do they control their schedule? Can they have visitors? Do they have access to their own money? They care about outcomes, not just the bricks and mortar.
So why didn't Michigan programs pass this scrutiny then?
This is the tragic part. According to the source, Michigan programs didn't fail heightened scrutiny. They never got the chance to try. Michigan simply didn't submit them for review. They just closed them instead.
That is just infuriating. It's like forfeiting a game before you even step on the field.
And blaming the referee for the loss.
Right. The ref wouldn't let us play. No, you just didn't show up.
Precisely. They opted out of the process entirely.
So if it wasn't the rule and it wasn't the scrutiny, why? Why did Michigan do this? We hinted at it with the Massachusetts comparison, but let's go there.
We have to follow the money. The source suggests, and strongly argues, that the closures weren't really about federal rules at all. They were about something the author calls managed failure.
Managed failure. That is a chilling term. It sounds so intentional.
It is intentional. But look at the economics. We mentioned the wage gap. Michigan pays $14.05 per hour for direct support professionals.
And the source compares that to Target, noting Target pays $16 an hour.
Think about that job description. At Target, you're stocking shelves, maybe running a register. Hard work, sure. But in these programs, you are managing aggressive behaviors, complex medical needs, toileting, sensory regulation. It is demanding, skilled work.
And you're asking people to do that for $2 less an hour than they could make stacking towels.
Exactly. You cannot retain staff at that rate. Turnover exceeded 60% annually. It's impossible to build a stable, compliant program when you lose more than half your staff every single year.
So managed failure basically means?
It means the system was set up to collapse. The HCBS rule was just a convenient scapegoat, camouflage, as the source puts it. The real cause was decades of inadequate reimbursement rates. The state didn't want to pay what Massachusetts or Pennsylvania pays, so they let the system fail and blamed Washington.
That puts a completely different spin on the inevitability of it all. It wasn't inevitable, it was a budget strategy.
A budget strategy that left hundreds of families without support.
So if you are listening to this and you're feeling that mixture of anger and clarity, the question is what now? The source isn't just a history lesson, it's a call to action.
Right. If we accept that this was a state choice, then the power to fix it lies with the state.
The source provides some specific questions for you to ask your legislators. And I love these because they are so direct, they just cut through the noise.
You do. The first one is incredibly simple. 9 top states kept their programs. Why couldn't Michigan?
That puts the burden of proof right back on them. If they can do it, why are we incompetent?
Exactly. The second question is, show us the specific regulation that requires elimination.
Basically telling them to show their work.
Yes. Don't tell me it's the rule. Show me the paragraph, because as we've seen, that paragraph simply doesn't exist.
And the third one, why didn't we create a regulation like Colorado's 8.491?
That asks for a solution. It says we know there is a blueprint. Why aren't we using it? It forces them to acknowledge that a solution exists.
The bottom line here is that the solution isn't in Washington, D.C. It's in Lansing.
It is. It requires legislative action to change policy and, crucially, to fund the workforce. Mm. You can't have high-quality services on poverty wages. The map just doesn't work.
So to recap what we've uncovered today, the story that families were told that the federal government banned their day programs was a myth.
A myth completely debunked by the reality of 9 other states. Massachusetts, Colorado, Pennsylvania, they all read the exact same rule and kept their doors open.
The heightened scrutiny that was supposed to be a death sentence was actually just a review process that Michigan opted out of.
And the root cause wasn't a law. It was a wage gap. $14.05 versus the $69 or $97,000 investments we see in other states.
It's a heavy realization, but it's also an empowering one. Because if it was a choice, a different choice can be made.
Absolutely. Policy is not weather. It's not something that just happens to you. It's made by people, and it can be changed by people.
If you want to dive deeper into this evidence, and there is a lot of it, or if you want to find the advocacy tools we mentioned, you can find the source material at oasisforautism.com/resources.
And I'd highly recommend looking at that Massachusetts data yourself. It really changes your perspective on what is possible.
We want to leave you with one final thought from the source. It's about Felicia, Jim's daughter, and the hundreds of others like her.
They lost their community. They lost their friends, their routine, their safe place. They didn't lose these things because of a law passed in Congress. They lost them because the state chose budget control over service sustainability.
If 9 other states proved it's possible to keep these communities alive, the only thing missing in Michigan is the will to make it happen.
And that will has to come from us pushing for it.
Thanks for listening to this deep dive. Stay curious and keep asking them to show their work.